Welcome to Sideline Judgment. My name is Sergio.
My name is Tyler.
And we are once again joined by our World Cup correspondent, Mr. Zach Gowdy. How you doing, Zach?
Not good.
Yeah.
Not.
That's because we are here to review the World Cup semifinals and preview the glorious World Cup final. And unfortunately, it is not coming home this year. England fell to Croatia 2-1 after extra time. Croatia will be joined by France, who beat Belgium 1-0 in regulation. And yeah, we're here to talk about it. I think first things first, Zach, take your time. Just let it out, my man. Let it out.
The floor is yours.
Honestly, like, a terrific run. And I'm so proud of the team. The whole country's proud. So, I'm so proud of the team. And, nobody expected them to get that far in the first place. Average age of 26. They're young. And this is their first World Cup. So, the promise is that they'll come back bigger and stronger in the next 4 years. And then we also have the Euros in 2 years. So I think we'll be fine. But to get all the way to the semifinals, hasn't done that since 1990. It's huge, but I just disappointed. I feel like we could have won that game. Mm-hmm. I feel like if we defended better, we could have won the game. But Croatia was a built squad. That midfield is tough. I also felt like we were passing back way too much throughout the game instead of passing it forward, which obviously our back three can handle. And Jordan Pickford has been great in goal. It's just
do you want to go into the game? Do you want to go into the game analysis then right away?
I'm just saying like this is like a old thing with England. Like every time we play, we've always had this thing happen where our defense decides to rely on our goalkeeper.
Meaning so he's playing long balls.
Playing not even long ball, but like passing back.
Right.
Always
right.
Passing back and almost ignoring the fact that there's a lethal striker on the other side who's just waiting to pick up any chance. And so we pass it back in the hopes that our goalkeeper can provide a long ball, but it always ends up that you use a bad pass, the goalkeeper miskicks it, or we get own goal or something crazy. This always happens with our defense, and it was just sad to see us revert back to that.
Yeah, especially when the strategy throughout the whole tournament was to play three in the back and to play the ball forward on the ground. You know, what I saw, and I didn't see the entire game. I went back and I dug in and saw like extended highlights. But what I saw was England playing the ball, like you said, back to Pickford, and then Pickford just throwing it up or kicking it long, and then Harry Kane would lose the aerial battles. It was simple as that. Like it seemed like there was no. It seemed like after the first goal, England kind of panicked and didn't know really how to handle the situation. And so rather than putting their foot on the gas and just playing the same way that they had played, they reverted back to what they did in the 90s and then what they did in the 2000s and what they did in the earlier part of this decade, where they would play the ball back to the keeper and then play long balls and just hope that their sheer athleticism would take over, which is weird because it was a complete 180 from what they've been doing this entire tournament.
Complete 180. That's why this team, there was so much faith in this team towards the end of their run was because it was a new brand of football that we haven't seen before. It was different. It was inspiring. It was fast paced. It was strong. So that was just disappointing to see them go back to that. I also think that Kyle Walker could have cleared that ball. And that's another thing that I think.
Which ball?
The ball to Perisic.
The first goal?
The equalizer. Mm-hmm. I felt like instead of him going down to head the ball up, he could have stood tall and tried to just clear it. Mm-hmm. Any way possible. Perisic is a big guy. Kyle Walker's not that tall. So, like, a foot over his head as he crouches over is exactly what's going to happen. And it happened. So I was just disappointed that we can keep it. We kept the lead to, like, 68 minutes. So I just thought that we could finish out like France did and be there. But, you know, our defense was strong, but Kyle Walker was always the weakest link in the chain, to be honest. But
I feel that, like, I mean, I feel this with most sports, that, like, once you get a comfortable lead, it's just hard for teams to kick it back into gear.
Right.
If you get a lead, you slow down, you play a different style, and then once you get threatened again, it's just hard to kick it back into gear. So not even when there was the equalizer, but when Croatia took the lead, I feel like it's just really hard for England to have switched from the style that they were playing that game and start switching back into it attacking.
I also feel like getting the lead as early as we did was a disadvantage. Do you get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I feel like you spend 5 minutes and now you have 85 minutes plus some sort of stoppage time somewhere along the line because somebody's going to go down. And, you know, you're playing in excess of 90 minutes, really. You got to keep that lead throughout all of it. It's tough. And I think maybe they bought into the fact that they scored, and then it just lazy passing, really. It came down to just really lazy passing. Mm-hmm. Some questionable substitutions at one point. I honestly think that Dele Alli was not fit to play that game.
Physically,
I just don't think he's been fit the whole run, to be honest.
Okay.
And that's led him to give up the ball in possession a multiple amount of times.
Places where he wouldn't normally do that.
Yeah, and he's also being asked to do something he's not necessarily good at. I mean, this tournament, especially this game against Croatia, was really Jesse Lingard and Dele Alli defending was the whole point of the team, them cup tracking back and defending with Henderson in order to, you know, close down Rakitic and Modric. I mean, even that in itself is a huge task for 20-year-olds. But that was working for a little bit, but we're talking about attack-minded players. I feel like maybe Eric Dier could have started with Jordan Henderson. You had two CDMs maybe, and you put Lingard up top or Dele Alli up top to complete the midfield. I don't know. But also I feel like Gareth Southgate was wise in sticking to his guns, picking the same squad because of chemistry reasons. It just wasn't our time, but it provides a lot of hope for the future that this team can be back there. I just hope that it doesn't turn into an expectation, which is something that we're notorious for, is expecting our teams to end up in particular places. So, you know.
And one thing I want to point out too is before we started recording, I was watching a video, it was an interview. Copa 90 did a FIFA and show with Ryan Sessegnon, Phil Foden, and Mason Mongeau, who are three of the players that were on the U17 England World Cup champion, U17 World Cup winners. Ryan Sessegnon plays for Fulham. Tyler, get used to that.
Duly noted.
Phil Foden plays for Man City, and Mason plays for Chelsea and was on loan at Vitesse last year and scored like 15 goals and 8 assists. And all three of them are 19 years old, 19, 18 years old. So there is hope, there is future. If you think 2 years ago, I just loved the analogy. 2 years ago, Mbappe was an afterthought, and now he's taken over the globe. So in 2 years, Ryan Sessegnon can play, if Southgate wants to keep that same formation, maybe you can throw Raheem Sterling on the right in a winger position where he's more comfortable and where he's more deadly, and Sessegnon on the left, and that's some dangerous pace on the side. Mason could be that creative attacking. He played a number 10 position, that creative attacking for Vitesse on loan last year. He could be that position. You know, there's youth that's coming through. There's also a young core of players there. There's optimism for England in the future.
There's huge.
Yeah.
And I was looking.
I mean,
go ahead, guys.
Gareth Southgate did an amazing job cutting down the team.
Yeah. And he was the U19 coach.
Point now.
He was the U19 or U20 coach, and he brought some of those young guys that he coached in the younger levels up to the senior team. So he's not afraid of the youth. You know, he's not afraid to play them, throw them in the fire. So,
yeah. One thing that I think that you can take, kind of take solace in, is that one of the, and especially with the World Cup, is that it's one of the most heartbreaking things for a lot of fan bases that win. Like, great teams lose all the time,
mm-hmm.
and it kind of is a thing that sucks with sports. But sometimes there's moments when you see it's hard, and you can see fans realize that the window closed.
Yeah,
and what's good, what you can take solace in, is that I firmly believe that England's not in that situation.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you flip the script, if Croatia had lost, it would have been the Croatian people being like having to slowly realize that the window just closed.
Yeah,
like their best shot was just. What's good for you? Like the first thing that you texted back to us in the group chat was, I think it was they'll be better for this.
Yeah.
And if this isn't the end, you'll come back. So you got solace in that. Like Sergio was just saying with the youth and everything, with a young core. I mean,
and there's more players that weren't even in the squad. That's the thing. That like
so many players.
Like Sessegnon, like Phil Foden. Like there's so many players that
the FA has a wonderful core right now. I mean, the hope is that these guys, I mean, majority of them are Premier League players. You know, the hope is they continue to grow and team be strong. I mean, that's been the focus, is developing a strong core of English talent. And mm-hmm. I think that this has been a huge step towards that. And we've been very receptive towards this team, you know. And as you said, you know, you never know what's going to happen in a couple of years. I mean, Harry Kane 4 years ago was watching the World Cup.
Mm-hmm.
And he was playing in it. So,
and now he's probably going to win the Golden Boot.
We're going to win the Golden Boot. So, I mean, it's just steps. It's steps, you know.
Yeah.
So it's exciting, but yeah. I mean, I'm pretty.
My favorite thing was I was on Twitter and Instagram today, and I want to say, Fox Soccer, their Instagram account, posted the cover of a bunch of English newspapers, and there were a couple that were like, "Oh, heartbreak for England." But my favorite one was, I think, the Daily Mail
mm-hmm.
said something along the lines of, "We're proud, respected. They're coming home. Our lads are coming home." Like it's nice to see the English press, and it's nice to see the general opinion be that way. I was also watching a recap video, a Copa 90 recap of these few guys that went to the game. And they were at the game, and the whole stadium cleared out, and it was like 45 minutes after the game ended, and the English fans were still there, and they were singing, you know, to the English players. After the game, instead of the traditional, "It's coming home," whatever, they sang, "They're coming home." Like, you know, there's going to be that sense of camaraderie. There's going to be that unification. 15, the English football is in a good point, in a good place right now. In the next 15 to 18 years, they'll be making noise.
Definitely.
All right, well, I guess that's all we'll talk about for now about England. I want to flip over to Croatia and just point out what I think they did properly, because we're talking a lot about how England turned around, they stopped playing out of the back, they played reserved back to long balls. I would not be surprised if every Croatian player was tested for doping, because how in the world is it that you play three straight games, right, into extra time, and you're still running? Like I don't understand. I sent a tweet to Tyler that I guess this could be our tweets we've shared for the episode. I sent a tweet to Tyler that said it was along the lines of, like, England looked like a team who are crawling to the finish line. Meanwhile, Croatia just came out of the bathroom doing their third line of coke and are ready to party for 4 a.m. Like, how in the world is it that they had this much energy?
All of their players, after the final, no matter what happens, all of their players will probably be in wheelchairs for, like, the next week.
And you know what? That's fine. Because if they win, they'll be in a wheelchair, and they'll be World Cup champions, and there will be a star above the Croatia badge.
Bro, but we saw the attrition. We saw them falling like flies. Like they are tired. And so, you know, as much as I think they're gonna do an amazing job against France, I just think that, you know, like Mandzukic's, like, his thigh went out.
Mandzukic like was after I saw the last goal. I finally got service where I was. And I saw the last goal on my phone in the remaining 10 minutes of extra time. And, well, first I want to talk about the goal. The winning goal. It's literally just energy. Mandzukic, the ball is played outside of the box. And you can kind of see the English defenders kind of like rest for a second. And in that split second, the ball is played overhead. And Mandzukic breaks between Harry Maguire and John Stones. And literally just out hustles him. He outruns him, and he gets into space, and then Jordan, and then just makes an outstanding finesse shot. Like it looks easy because Pickford dove the wrong way. But first of all, at that situation, in a split second, Pickford's just gonna pick a side. He went to protect the near post, as he probably should have. And the other thing is, Mandzukic is resting, and then sharply like burst with a burst of energy to score, and that was the difference. You know, he's a clinical finisher. He plays for Juve. Like, he's not a bad player. He just knew when to use his energy and properly. You know, he conserved it, and then went off on the break. And that's when we saw afterwards, once England kind of went into overdrive and went into panic mode, Mandzukic fell to the floor, and some English players thought it was time wasting, but I don't think it was. He was just gassed. He was cramping.
I mean,
he was embellishing it, obviously. Yeah.
It was kind of time wasting.
It was, but it was a serious concern.
I would agree. I would agree with that.
Yeah, that's my thing there. That I don't think it wasn't Mbappe forgetting how to dribble, which we'll talk about in a minute when we talk about the France Belgium game. But you know, he had his moment. So I just wanted to say that about Mandzukic in Croatia. They played an outstanding game. Modric. If you tell me Modric isn't a world-class midfielder and isn't a top five central midfielder in the world, I'm not taking anything you say after that seriously. Like, sorry. Luka Modric was pressing at the right moments, finding his wingers in space when he needed to. It was
that whole midfield was phenomenal. I mean, Perisic and Rebic on the wings. Mm-hmm. I mean,
Rakitic sitting a little bit deeper.
Rakitic sitting deep. Modric just playing up in camera where he's supposed to be.
Yeah.
They did bits. So. Yeah.
So, hats off to Croatia.
Hats off.
It really is, like, seriously, it's impressive. It is, as much as it sucks, you know, because we were all, this was an England podcast. as much as it sucks that they're out. It is like, it's kind of cool that the team that would have beat them would be Croatia getting to their first final. They've got a chance to, you know, win their first ever World Cup. And
a lot of people are bringing up the fact that they only have like 4.1 million citizens and inhabitants. But if I'm being honest, I sometimes think having a smaller country is not an advantage, but kind of an advantage. Because you only have to focus so much. Like, people say, like, oh, how can the United States, a country full of millions and millions of people, not come up with 11 players to good soccer players? And it's harder than you think. Not only in the United States, yeah, but when you're concentrated and the one sport is football for you to play, it's not hard for the Croatian FA to go, we're going to go here, then we're going to go here, we're going to find, oh, we got one here, perfect, take him, we're going to develop him, and come up with a good squad, you know?
But I think that's the difference, is one sport. I mean, in America, we have a bunch of sports.
Oh, yeah, well, but that's a whole other podcast that we can go into.
Basketball and football, I mean...
Talent evaluation and development in the U.S. is always going to be harder at probably every level, because there's more athletes. It's not necessarily that it's harder to hit on people, but it's easier to miss.
Yeah.
Yes. Correct. Correct. Plus, but the good ones will be found.
They will be, and that's the hope. But I also think, like, the culture's been shifting in the U.S. is to soccer. So
yeah, I was listening. I was listening to a Bill Simmons podcast today where he talked with Chuck Klosterman about that soccer is replacing the baseball demographic, that baseball numbers are going down, and it's slowly becoming. If you ask people, I think the demographic under 35, if you ask people if they prefer soccer or baseball, it's something like 2-1 answers are. 2-1 answers are soccer. Sorry, I just got an alert. I'm going to break news real quick. Wayne Ellington signs a one-year, $6.2 million deal with the Heat. So our three-point shooter is staying. Oh, okay, good. Whew, sorry. Had to take a breath because I was worried about our free agency stuff. One-year, $6.2 million, Wayne Ellington. It looks like the mid-level. I don't think it's the mid-level. Mid-level is 5.3.
Sergio, I need you to text Eddie live on the pod. Text Eddie right now. All right,
fine. While I text Eddie live on the pod, I need you, Tyler, to do the transition to the boring game of the semifinals and kick off our conversations about France and Belgium.
All right, so in England-Croatia, the Golden Generation defeats a very youthful team. We flip it over to the other game, and it is the exact opposite. The youthful team defeats the Golden Generation, and in as I just talked about earlier, with kind of windows closing, you kind of see that with Belgium. But, yeah, it was a one in, France defeats Belgium 1-0. It was a good game. It was weird because looking back, I forgot originally what exactly the score was because that was the first game that happened. I knew that France won, but I was like, was it 1-0? Was it 2-0? And it felt like a 2-0 game to me. But then you say it was 1-0, and I don't know. It just France looked really good, and they just looked like they got energy for days.
Yeah, that French squad is scary. I said it before the World Cup started. I said that French team is scary. So I mean, I feel like it's really what I figured it out. It's really that team is all defensive. It's defense into attack.
France starts and ends with N'Golo Kanté.
Exactly.
An amazing game.
Here's my thing. If Croatia win, Luka Modric deserves Ballon d'Or. If France win, I mean, sorry, the golden ball. My bad, the golden ball. And if France win, to me, it's N'Golo Kanté. N'Golo Kanté, the way France plays, and that's the reason the French are so agitated with Deschamps, but I feel like, obviously, winning cures everything. So if they win, nobody's going to care. They're just going to remember that they have another star over their badge. But the thing with this team is that they have a solid back four. Lloris, as shown in the game against, was it Uruguay?
Yeah.
In the game against Uruguay, that the man, while he may have had an interesting season at Tottenham, is still one of the best keepers, a top 10, if not top 5 keeper in the world.
He had some incredible saves in this game.
Yeah, exactly. And N'Golo Kanté is the pillar, is the rock. N'Golo Kanté is the Jesus Christ to this church of French football. Like, there's a great article by Neil Blackman on theyanksarecoming.com, which is I highly recommend, if you like American soccer, I highly recommend reading theyanksarecoming.com. Neil Blackman wrote an article basically about N'Golo Kanté and how his play and his style he plays, what he does is so why it's so vital to the French national team, and also some personal history on his transfers and stuff and whatnot. But he does a great job of demonstrating and explaining how when the ball is won, or N'Golo Kanté, we talk about box-to-box midfielders that go up the field, but N'Golo Kanté is more of a touchline to touchline midfielder where he can kind of glide across the field horizontally and can recover anything. He is always stepping. It's like he's one step ahead of his opposition in terms of where they want to play the ball so he can move there. And him doing that allows Paul Pogba to go ahead and move onto that right side and play those 1-2s with Mbappe. And when you give Mbappe the speed, when you combine N'Golo Kanté's pressure and defensive abilities with Paul Pogba's ability to find players in open space and Mbappe running in that open space, with Griezmann and Blaise Matuidi trailing on the back and Olivier Giroud coming up and running with him and stuff, it's deadly. It's a counter-attacking style that you wouldn't expect from a powerhouse like France, but they literally have the perfect players to pull it off. Like, if I'm creating on FIFA, I'm creating the perfect counter-attacking team, I'm including Mbappe, I'm including Pogba, and I'm including Mbappe. Like, they have the perfect tools.
Put Mbappe on there twice, just like you just put Mbappe on twice.
You know what? Mbappe's so fast, I see him. I see double. I'm seeing double, bro. Mbappe square.
As you're describing this team,
mm-hmm.
you know what they feel like to me, to translate it to American football?
Yeah.
This is the 2015 Florida Gators with Will Grier. This is just a fantastic defense, and then like Will Grier and Antonio Callaway that just make magic happen. I'm sorry to make you cry, Sergio.
Yeah, the sound of sadness that you hear is not Simon and Garfunkel. It's just my brain and my heart breaking into 45,000 pieces. Okay, we're not gonna dwell on Will Grier on a World Cup podcast, my man. But that is a great analogy, Tyler.
I'm sorry. I just had.
We can talk about that when we go into our college football preview sometime in the next month. Teaser.
True.
But yes, this French team is perfectly built for that to happen.
I was just gonna say though, I feel as much as like as soccer fans, we identify Kante as the star
Messiah.
Here. The
Messiah?
What?
The Messiah, the second coming?
Yeah. He's not gonna get the credit.
Unfortunately.
Because he's not scoring like him,
goals.
Tommy.
He's not scoring goals.
He's not scoring goals.
He's not an offensive player.
Defensive rock. And he's, you know what he is? He's a faster and smaller Makelele. And if you guys Makelele?
Yes, man. Yeah. Wow, are in your bag. You're deep in your bag today. I like that.
And the thing about
Zach, could you explain to Tyler who Makelele is?
I have zero clue who you're talking about.
It's a French defensive midfielder.
From the 98 team.
No, they won it that year. So yeah.
He played for Real Madrid and Chelsea.
Mm-hmm.
And those were one of his two prominent clubs. But he was bashed by the French media because he played the ball side to side. He didn't move the ball. He wasn't like a very fast player. He didn't move the ball with any style. He wasn't a flair player. He was very fundamental. He would win the ball back, pass it to a teammate, and they begin the attack. And a lot of the media didn't like him because he played boring football. I mean,
quote unquote boring.
Right. The president of Real Madrid, Florentino Perez, sold him because he quote unquote played boring football. But he was the reason why Real Madrid won the Champions League that year. He also went to Chelsea and they went and won the Premier League that year. So when he left Real Madrid dipped. I think they came second that year or something. I have to check the facts. But he was such an integral part of that defense that people didn't realize how important he was. And I feel that's exactly where N'Golo Kante is right now, that a few people understand what he brings to the table, but I don't feel everyone's going to fully understand that.
I don't mean to be like soccer elitist or soccer, you know, I am a soccer hipster, but I don't mean to be like, I am better than you because I read the game better because I have more experience and blah, 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 blah. No, that just turns people away from the game. And that's not what I want. We want as many people watching the game as possible, but it is a case of everyone focusing on Mbappe, the young, flashy toy, and people not realizing that the only reason Mbappe can get that much space is because Paul Pogba can go ahead and find him there. And the only reason Paul Pogba can find him there is because N'Golo Kante is literally, like, playing the best football of the tournament, you know?
Like Messi's downfall was because of Kante. And I don't think
in the Argentina game.
In the France-Argentina game.
I'm out here thinking big picture, like, wait a minute, what?
it was Kante completely swallowed Messi up. Messi didn't know where he could put the ball because Kante was everywhere.
He's always there, bro.
Always there, always in front of him, always shuffling where
he's
he
like
wanted.
In basketball, he's like Kawhi Leonard in basketball, where like he's always you. Kawhi was at the baseline, and all of a sudden he's at the top of the arc, and 2.5 seconds went by, and they switched defenders, and you didn't realize it. Like he comes out of nowhere, you know. He presses you, and Kante presses you when you least expect it. So we here are in agreement of Conte's brilliance.
Definitely.
How the question now is, can France – I read a great article on The Athletic today about this matchup, the matchup in the final. And basically – I forgot who wrote it. But basically the argument was, what's going to give is – excuse me – is the high press – that Croatia plays, that try to win the ball upfield, going to win? Or is the defensive counterattacking style of French football going to win? I personally believe, and I guess here we can, before we go on, I guess we're going on to the final right now, but real quick, Belgium played good. Eden Hazard came out and he said, I'd rather lose with this Belgian team than win the World Cup with this French team. And it's an ode to they don't play quote-unquote good soccer. They don't play flashy. They're bunkering. Not bunkering, but they're playing smart defensively and hitting people on the counter. But in my opinion, if you can come up with a strategy and you can use your best players to their fullest extent, that's good soccer. Sorry. Like...
Winning
is good. It's the Leicester City
model. So I would agree.
It's the Leicester City model. It's exactly how Leicester City won the Premier League 2 years ago. They got it. They had a good think about it. And Conte was playing that position. They had Mahrez, who was able to create space and find players in open space, and they had a fast player up top that could score goals like Vardy. It's a formula, guys. The constant here is N'Golo Conte. But enough Conte talk. I'm so sorry. I went on another tangent. Belgium. Let's talk about Belgium. What did you guys see from Belgium in this game? Zach, you said that the big key for you was going to be Lukaku and how he responded and which Lukaku we were going to see. Were we going to see the more aggressive and physical Lukaku, or were we going to see the one who kind of holds up, waits for players to go by him, plays 1-2, does those off-the-ball runs? What did you see from this Belgium team? Why couldn't they score?
I feel like we saw Manchester United Lukaku. I feel like he slipped back into that role he plays at United. I feel like he wasn't making as many runs. He was kind of playing the number nine role. And he didn't have as much freedom as he had in that Brazil game. I just think that's just because of how France were playing.
Do you think it's because of what Roberto Martinez came out and did technically? Like it was part of the tactical plan or because of what France was giving them and they had to adjust?
I think both. I think Roberto Martinez came in with a defensive team. I think defensive-minded. I mean, Witzel and Fellaini were starting in the midfield. I think it was an all-out defensive team to cope against the counterattack that is France.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I think that came with a detriment to Lukaku. But I also think that French defense swallowed up Lukaku. I don't think he had the ability to get past Varane and MTT in the middle. So, I just think just how it happened. I don't think he didn't have proper service. He wasn't playing a team that allowed him to have enough space. And so I think that he kind of fell into playing that back-to-goal striker. So
right. Well, okay. So with that being said, let's go ahead and move on to the final. Let's see if France can recreate that kind of pressure, maybe not so much with a striker up top, but maybe in the midfield, can they suffocate Luka Modric and Ivan Rakitic? Let's go and make our predictions, then tell us why, and let's go Zach, Tyler, and then I'll wrap it up. Zach, who you got, my man?
France all the way, man. I said it when the tournament started, and I keep saying it, that French team is scary. I think that defensively solid. I think they play defense to attack. I think that's the whole team.
That's part of the criticism. That's part of the criticism that you see in France of Deschamps and of this whole French team, is that they don't play this super possessive, aggressive style of football. They decide that they want to sit back, use their advantages, which is N'Golo Kanté and their defense, and allow the ball to go from N'Golo Kanté to Paul Pogba, who can find players that make space, and then making sure that Mbappe can find space on the wings. And, you know, if something happens, if Blas Matuidi gets in a yellow card and get too risky or whatever, you got to take him out, then you can throw in Ousmane Dembele on that side, or you can throw in Fakir, or you can throw in Thomas Lemar. Like, you have players that you can throw in there, you know? Yeah. So, Zach, you got France?
Yep.
Tyler, who you got?
Well, this is tough for me because I came in today. Mm-hmm. I came in today expecting to pick Croatia. It is weird because France has been so dominant, but Croatia just keeps winning. Mm-hmm. I think they've got the best pure unit in their midfield, Ivan Rakitic and Luka Modric, who just...
Look at Tyler talking like he watches the championship every weekend or something. Like,
I'm trying to learn, guys.
Tyler, I'm proud. I'm very proud of you.
Thank you. Yeah, but I think they've got the best, like, unit because, like, Modric just gets better as the game goes on. But the issue with that, I think, is that when you really look at it, and as I'm talking about it, I'm talking myself into France, like, France is a better overall team. Mm-hmm. And they have been more dominant. And Croatia has straight up played four games in three because they played three straight extra time games.
Mm-hmm.
And at some point, that's got to mean something.
Mm-hmm.
I think a big matchup, the Justin Long lookalike for Selko. He's going to be matched. He's probably going to be matched up with Mbappe.
Mm-hmm.
And Selko, like, they're all, I mean, all the Croatia players are falling apart.
And a big thing, talking about those matchups on the wings, we were talking about whoever's matched up against Pavard is basically going to have the best shot, right, Zach? You were saying that earlier.
I was saying that I think Pavard is not as strong defensively as the other three in that back unit, and I think that if we have Perisic against Pavard, I think Perisic is going to have a field day.
What could happen is Perisic could go ahead, slip behind the center backs, and Luka Modric, or more realistically, Ivan Rakitic, who's sitting deeper, can play a chip ball and then just outpace him and find a goal in the net. And it's one of those like, oh, shoot, how did Croatia score? And then you realize it was all – the whole play developed on the wing.
Exactly.
Well, yeah, I mean, I just think that it's going to be – tough game. It's going to be a close game, closer than I think a lot of people that will think it is. I think a lot of people are going to think that France is going to blow by them, and I don't think that's going to happen, but I think that as I've talked about it more, as we've all talked about it, I think that I'm going to pick France.
I'm going to agree with both of you and take France, and it is for N'Golo Kanté reasoning only. I think N'Golo, not only, but mostly N'Golo Kanté. I think N'Golo Kanté can stop Luka Modric. I think N'Golo Kanté can control his defensive third and the middle third of the field. And I also feel like he can absorb that high press that Croatia likes to play. Croatia likes to play with a high press system, which is not good on their legs. And like we said, they played four games in three. Yeah, I think N'Golo Kanté is too good for reason, and I think, like I said before, he'll find Paul Pogba. Paul Pogba will find Mbappe. If it's not Mbappe, he can find play 1-2s of Griezmann. Griezmann can play connecting build-up with Giroud. If you need substitutes off the bench, you have Lemar, Fakir, Dembele. You got players. You got a squad. I think it just does it. They do it themselves, you know? I think that's how it rolls.
Yeah, I mean, makes sense to me. A quick note that my father has communicated to me that he will be picking Croatia.
Let me give your father two words of advice, and that is N'Golo Kanté. I need your dad to go ahead and watch him. Pick him out. Point him out. He's number 13. When you watch the game with your dad on Sunday, hopefully you guys go somewhere where you can watch it, like I recommended in my piece for my brother's blog, Cultural Inspector. Go watch him. Watch how he moves in that side to side. Watch how he prevents buildup from happening. He is the reasoning. I subscribe to the Church of Kanté. Y'all think I'm playing. Y'all think I'm playing. And the thing, because I, when I grew up, when I was playing club soccer and rec soccer stuff, I played center defensive midfield. And so I'm looking at him and I'm drooling and I'm like, oh, I wish I was half as good as you. Oh my gosh. But yes.
I was always a defender in when I played soccer, like way, yes. way back.
And now we are glad that you have returned to the beautiful game. So Sideline Judgment has officially picked all three of us across the board, France, to win the World Cup. The Saturday third place game, honestly, we're not going to talk about it. All I got to say is Harry Kane probably winning the Golden Boot. Lukaku is second, two goals behind him. So I guess keep an eye out for a possible Lukaku hat trick and that's if Harry Kane doesn't score himself. So
yeah, that's true.
Hey, at least something's coming home, and it's the Golden Boot.
Golden Boot. I mean, it's honestly impressive that Belgium and England are managed to play in two games this tournament that don't mean anything.
Yeah, exactly. FIFA needs to look into that. Before we go, I got a couple things. The first one is the honorary Boy You Wildin' Award of the Week. And the inaugural Boy You Wildin' Award of the Week is going to none other than Dejan Lovren, center back for the Croatian national team and for Liverpool Football Club. This man, after the game, and I'm paraphrasing him here, but he said that he doesn't understand why he doesn't get the respect that he thinks he deserves. He goes, I led my club to the Champions League final, and now I've led my club to my national team to the World Cup final. I am not as bad as people think I am. And to that I say, boy, you wildin'.
I saw on Twitter, and he legit considered, he said, why don't people consider me one of the greatest center backs in the world?
You know what that sounds like? You know what that sounds like? When my seven, oh my gosh, 8-year-old, she turns 8 in 2 days. When my 8-year-old sister, like my brother and I eat like all the ice cream, and she's like, why didn't I have ice cream? What about me? What about me? Yeah, that's what I feel like. Like, what's down? Is your name Luka Modric? Is your name Perisic? Is your name Ivan Rakitic? Boy, sit down. Are you Mo Salah? Are you Roberto Firmino? Are you Sané? Sit down, bro.
Nobody's giving Lovren a Mets contract next
year. I know.
Nobody's going to do that.
And to his like benefit, like I'll give him this. He did play better when Van Dijk showed up in January, but that's more a testament to Van Dijk shirting up the back line than it is to him. So that is our inaugural Boy You Wildin' Award of the Week. It may not be an every week thing, but when we see fit, we will give that award out.
That needs to be almost a weekly thing.
The boys are not always wildin'. So
Boy You Wildin'.
Boy You Wildin'. But we do want to end on something happy, something nice. If you've been keeping up with the news, you've seen that there was a group of 12 youth soccer players and their coach stuck in a cave in Thailand. They were without food and water for 2 weeks, and they ended up finally, the Thai Navy SEALs spent the past 2-3 days rescuing them, and they are all now healthy. They're all good. They are all saved. And we just want to send our love, send our support, and our prayers out there to the group of young athletes that have chosen to play the beautiful game that we love, and also to the Thai Navy SEALs for risking their lives for going out there and helping those children and that manager. There's rumors that FIFA has allotted tickets to the final. I saw that on Reddit. And hopefully they are of good health to be able to attend. And it's just a good story. You know, that's our moment of the week this week. I know we're not having moments of the week during the World Cup, but that is our collective moment of the week, right, gentlemen?
Yeah.
I agree completely.
I guess that's it, guys. That's all we got for today. We will be back on Monday reviewing the World Cup final, seeing who won the Golden Boot, the Golden Ball, a Golden Glove, the Young Boy, all those awards that are given out. And we'll give our World Cup moratorium. It'll be a nice little way to close the book on the 2018 World Cup, and we will we will have to start counting down the days until 2022 when it's in Qatar. Tyler, we hope that you don't leave and abandon us in this 4.5 year stretch, because the next World Cup will be played in the winter because it is too hot in Qatar. So we have a little bit longer to wait for that next World Cup, but as always, it will be worth it. But yeah, Tyler, Fulham, am I right?
Fulham, yep.
Do we have a Premier League club? Because I don't have a Premier League club because I just kind of like to watch, but I'll go full in with the Fulham stuff with you if it's going to get you to watch more games.
You don't have to. I'm going to let you make that decision. Without watching a game, I am now full in with Fulham.
Okay, so that's my club. So we need to get matching Fulham kits.
Correct.
If it's not Tim Ream, I'm going to be mad because he's an American who plays for Fulham.
Okay, let's
do it. We got to get Tim Ream jerseys. Let's do it.
Zach is, you guys can't see this, but Zach is just, Zach is giving us the Boy You Wild in reward.
I'm crying laughing at this. This is hilarious.
Hey, he's getting into it. That's what we want. We want as many people into it.
I love it.
Oh, my. Make sure to join us this coming week for our World Cup review. And keep an eye out. Tyler and I will be coming back with, it's starting to look like preview time, Tyler.
It's it's talking season.
It's talking season before it becomes lion season.
Correct.
This has been another episode of Sideline Judgment. My name is Sergio.
My name is Tyler.
Thank you so much, Zach, for coming back on, our official World Cup correspondent. And we will speak to you guys when we have a World Cup champion. We're not biased, but go France. Viva la France. Viva la France, viva l'Mbappe, viva la Kante.
Oh, boy, you wild.
Boy, you wild.